Yo, 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 what's up all you burner stoners and potheads? This is Weedman 420 with the Weedman 420 Chronicles. How are all you vipers doing out there, Mrs. Weedman?
Mr. Weedman.
How the hell are you?
I'm doing all right.
You doing all right?
Yeah.
All right. I love
ready
it.
To get normal.
We are ready to get normal. You might as well light that doink up, okay. Everybody out there in the world. Hopefully you're smoking some big fat doinks while you're listening to the show. Mrs. Weedman and I are about to get normal. We're smoking some iced grape grown by our friend Big Earl. Mrs. Weedman, light that up.
All right.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
We are smoking some ice grape grown by our friend Big Earl. I don't have any information about this. I've only smoked it once, and I loved it. It smells wonderful. I dry hit it, too, to really taste it. Mrs. Weedman, you're going to like this. The buds were so frosty and so super-duper ooby-dooby newbie buds. They were big, big. Delicious smelling, and I'm super stoked to smoke this with you, Mrs. Weedman.
Likewise, Mr. Weedman.
Mrs. Weedman, it was Mother's Day on
That's
Sunday.
That's tasty. Ooh, fires over here.
fire. It was Mother's Day on Sunday.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice day?
I had a wonderful day. As much as I hate preparing for... I'm sorry. I'm trying to put the hemp wick out.
Time with that.
Yeah,
you're
the
right
hemp
there?
Wick. It's hard to put out. As much as probably everybody hates preparing for company coming to their house, I love entertaining. And so we had family over and spouses and whoever.
Can I have a lighter?
Those people brought. Do you want the wick?
No, just give me a lighter. Thank you.
We had a yard party, and I love yard parties. So it was great. We were on the patio. It was beautiful out here in Chicago. It was like almost 80 degrees, hardly a cloud in the sky. So we sat on the patio and had way too much food and some mimosas.
You bought enough food for like 80 people.
I did.
And we only had 18.
Yeah. Well, maybe not 80 people, but there was a lot of food.
You could have fed 80 people.
I was trying to make it, I generally don't want to entertain on Mother's Day, and the moms shouldn't have to cook and clean for Mother's Day, but I think now that we don't have kids at home, where I'm not picking up and doing, like, everyday motherly things, it's kind of nice to prepare and...
We crushed it.
And mom.
We got
yeah,
the yard
it
ready.
It was great.
We spent all day Saturday smoking Orange Soul,
yeah.
grown by Big Earl,
yep.
and just working on the yard, getting that shit done. And it
yeah,
was fun.
We have giant cicada, like this huge historical outbreak. I don't know what you're supposed to call it. Manifestation,
birth of cicadas.
A shit ton of cicadas are coming to the Chicagoland Midwest region.
They're coming
all around us, and they're like due any day. Like I think the ground temperature has to get up to like 64 degrees. So depending on where you live within the Midwest, you may have cicadas already. So. We haven't gotten the yard ready because it was kind of like, well, what's the point? We're going to have the next 8 weeks of, you know, Bug City. And I don't know. Anyway, it was like an encouraging way. We've realized that the weather was going to be accommodating on Sunday and we had Saturday free. So it was like, let's get out there and just crank out this yard, get it ready. We won't plant any flowers because the cicadas are going to just trash everything. And so anyway, we had a fantastic day. Too much food.
And a lot
but
of
a
fun.
Lot of laughs. And a lot
of laughs.
Fun. Yeah,
a lot
it was
of,
great.
A lot of meeting new people, too.
Yeah, we had, like, now everybody, like, next gen, right? Like, our kids and all the nieces and nephews are starting to marry and date more seriously. So then there's family. So we had a lot of, like, extended family. Mm-hmm. So really, it was our family and then the parents or, yeah, it was mostly just parents or moms of the person that everyone is dating.
There was something cool you really did, though, for all the kids.
Yeah.
So what Mrs. Weedman came up with the
What's
last
the deal here with
last
joint?
Moment, because you're talking too much. You're just letting it go. There you go. Mrs. Weedman, at the last moment, did two things. First thing she did, she bought some chalk.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She decorated the fence.
Well, because we made this a combo engagement, little engagement well wishes for Paul, our
Polly
son, little
Shoddy.
Polly and Shoddy, because we hadn't had an engagement party
right.
for them yet, and the bugs were coming.
Right.
So it was like, oh, we can kind of double
so
it up.
So you made a mural.
I made a mural.
That said,
on
love
the fence.
Is. Mm-hmm. And it had a beautiful sun and hearts, and it was gorgeous. I don't know if you saw Mrs. Weedman 8 Decades. Her Instagram showed a picture of us having a fun with it, but everyone took pictures with it and said, love is, and it was you and your partner or you or whatever. And it was such a nice way to express. And everybody that walked into the yard today, that's the first thing you kind of actually noticed because the sun was hitting it. It was perfect. It was so nice. But the real cool thing you did too was another last moment thing was you ran to the garden store and you bought flower pots and flour and soil, flowers, like little different types of flowers and pots and soil and had each of the kids make a planter for their mom.
Yeah.
It was special. Yeah. And you also got...
So then
you,
all the moms got to go home with flowers.
Yes. And you and your sisters made one for your mom. And mm-hmm. So if there was two kids here, they did it together. And it was... I loved watching it. I thought it was something special to see something like that happen. It's probably out again.
It's out again.
You're not hitting it.
Because I'm going to be too high.
Well, stop hitting it then.
But I want more.
You can never be too high, Mrs. Weed Man. So anyway, I thought it was something special. So if you're ever out there and you're throwing a Mother's Day shindig, party, fun activity, or even an activity, something to give back to the environment.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of nice. It wasn't, you didn't, those were nice pots to reuse too every year. So they weren't like pots you would just throw away. So good job, Mrs. Weed Man.
Well, thanks, Mr. Weed Man.
Giving you some props.
Thanks.
Because you're out of the box thinking sometimes saves the day or makes the day better, whichever way you want to look at it.
Well, yeah, I've got this a little like hiatus in my work schedule right now. And so it just has been I've had a little extra free time, which has been nice. And so I've been taking advantage of it and doing like housey things that I like doing.
Yeah, it's been nice.
So, entertaining is one of them.
Yeah,
it was fun.
And then this Sunday, don't forget to come and see us at Blue On Beer Company for Chad the Burr.
If you don't watch us on YouTube and you're just listening to us, I am having a lot of trouble with this joint.
Because you're not hitting it.
I hit it. I light it. And I take a hit. And I don't take another hit fast enough. And it just keeps going out. Too much space.
It's a tight woven joint too, I think. So that new joint roller I got is spectacular. Oh, I love it. Anyway, so we'll be at Blue Line Beer Company this Sunday.
This Sunday.
May 19th at 4:20 the show starts. Doors open at four. Yep. And it's Chad the Bird again talking about weed and other comedians and our favorite band, Grit the Double Knit, Mr. G.
It's part two, the smoke show, part two.
And come by our table because I'll be rolling joints and stuffing joints for people. And Mrs. Weedman will have the Eight Decades gear all out. And we'll also have some of our other friends that we get to see all the time at these events there too. So come check us out there. And then also, everybody, don't forget to check out 8decades.com for some of the finest cannabis gear on the planet. Check out 8decades.com. Make sure you check it out. Mrs. Weedman's got some good stuff on that website. So don't you, Mrs. Weedman?
I do. I like to think so.
I love it. So you ready to get the show started?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do this. Unveiling the truth behind cannabis and alcohol regulations. Why the copy and paste method isn't going to be enough. A lot of people think we should regulate cannabis like alcohol and tobacco. I agree in some ways, but in some ways it is a totally different thing that you do. And it's... I don't think it should be so heavily regulated as alcohol and tobacco. Just my opinion, but let's see what this article talks about. Balancing similarities and inherent differences in cannabis and alcohol regulations. Alcohol and cannabis are often seen as being similar in everything except their chemical effects, as they are regulated substances that people use to take the edge off. Because of the precipitation that cannabis and alcohol are similar, regulations on the two industries often go hand in hand. For example, in New York, the proximity rules for dispensaries are almost identical to the rules for liquor stores. Yeah, that's why they're having so many problems in New York right now. In New York, the head of the cannabis regulation department just quit. That's the second one they lost already. So can't get their shit together. The proximity rules for dispensaries are almost identical to the rules for liquor stores. Many of the regulators working at the New York State Office of Cannabis Management, OCM, previously worked in the New York State Liquor Authority, so they have no clue and understand cannabis at all. The three-tier system for alcohol producers go like this. Producers, suppliers, distributors, and retailers. And then also, if you add a fourth, you add the consumer. Formed the basis, at least on paper, for the four-tier system we have in cannabis. Cultivators, producers, distributors, and retailers. So, oof. If you're going to be regulating the two industries in similar ways, we should be honest about the inherent difference between cannabis and alcohol. It'd be so much easier if you just let caregivers do it, because then it just comes right from the caregiver right to the the buyer, the consumer. It's so much easier that way. On the business side, the two are different in one key way. Long-term storage and expiration dates. Alcohol is sold in large containers and can take up a lot of space. Cannabis is much more compact, with hundreds of thousands of dollars of products occupying just one room. Additionally, alcohol often gains value over time, whereas cannabis goes bad fairly quickly in comparison. Because of this, cannabis purchasers may be wary of overpurchasing products and that then expire before being sold. Since expiring products are bad for everyone, regulations pertaining to cannabis should target volume restrictions, especially minimum order quantities and large volume discounts. Ooh, I like that. In the liquor industry and beer industry, there is a lot of regulations on buying, selling, giving something of value. There's a lot of people that do wrong and get away with not getting caught and doing certain things, but there is a lot of regulations when it comes to that. And in cannabis right now, I know here in Illinois, there is no regulations on that at all. And I see a ton of overbuying, a ton of volume discounts, a ton of stuff that in the liquor industry, or in especially the beer industry, if you do one for one, you have to do it for everybody.
What does that mean?
Like
one for one.
So basically, if you offer something in price, everyone has to get the same price. If you offer some kind of, you can have different.
Who's watching so that
the state. Yeah. Just like here, the state gets washed in cannabis too, but the liquor and beer industry is so, the regulations in some states are tough. Some are not, but some are lenient in certain ways. But in Illinois, there is a limit of how much you can give a value, like giving away a gift, you know, but it's still pretty extant. It's a lot of money. You can still give away a lot. But there's so much just like, I shake my head on how much I see and how much is wasted and how much money is being thrown out the window. And now here in Illinois, it's just now no one buys unless you're on sale. And that just really just happened in a year's time. A year or two ago, you didn't see many discounts. You saw 10%, 15% discounts. Now it's BOGO fucking city. Not everybody can keep up with that, especially the newer craft growers aren't going to be able to keep up with that. The MSOs and the corporate cannabis people will be able to control that so much. So what the craft growers are going to have to do is come up with quality, better quality. It's going to be more expensive, of course, because the quality is there, smaller grows, but you're going to want to go after that because the quality will be there. But it's just in the end, though, it's who's going to have the most money that's going to make it. And that's sad to see without all these regulations. So let me finish this. Other differences may appear to be inherent differences are more due to the relative maturity of the markets and not due to the products themselves. For example, the difficulty of accepting credit cards for cannabis is not unique. With alcohol, it took 53 years after the end of Prohibition before credit cards were accepted for alcohol purchases in New York. Family seeing and selling wine and spirits in Manhattan for over 60 years, and after credit cards were authorized for liquor, the owners saw firsthand as his stores became safer to operate. The only violent incidents in his stores came during cash-only era, which we see in cannabis right now. In the last 40 years, there has not been a single armed robbery in any of the liquor stores because it's more debit cards and credit cards now. Another Fox difference in the existence of cannabis, black market or traditional market, while it is true today that brazen selling of unlicensed alcohol out of pricey Manhattan storefronts would not go unaddressed as the illicit cannabis market has, this was not always the case. After Prohibition ended in 1933, there were still many states that banned alcohol. Because of patchworked legalized status of alcohol, bootlegging continued to exist for decades after alcohol legalization. It was only after alcohol became widely legalized that you saw bootlegging mostly disappear. There is a reason to believe the same could be true for cannabis. Using alcohol regulations as the basis for cannabis regulations is not inherently problematic, but regulators should be cautious that they are not haphazardly copy and pasting regulations. Regulators should be honest about the inherent differences between the two products when crafting regulations. If the industry is not intentional with how they set up this industry, then everyone is setting themselves up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go state by state, and the ones I've been to, the ones I've read about, the ones I've worked in, every state's. There's some states that have same laws, but I would say that's an 80-20. 80%, all of them are different. 20%, they might have some same standardizations and stuff in there. But the kickbacks and the pricing and what you do is it's the same thing in the alcohol and beer industry. A little bit more regulations though in the alcohol and beer industry, but people still get away with stuff, you know, and the cannabis industry is going right down that way. And I've said it once and I'll say it 100 times. I'll say it till the day I die. There is enough money in this industry for everybody to make. Stop being fucking greedy. Stop trying to be a billionaire. Everybody can make a good living off of this. This wasn't intended for one corporation or only a handful of corporations to rule this. I will say that and argue with anybody about that anytime. This is a living making plant for everybody to make a living on. So, this is a good one for you. I gave you this one because you always want to learn more. You know, so understanding cannabinoids and their medical uses.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different cannabinoids out there now, a lot that we're learning about, a lot that we're using now. I just gave out on Mother's Day. Some people had digestive issues and some people had inflammation saying that, so I gave them a CBG and 10 milligrams of CBD gummy only, no THC. And I had one of the... like an hour or two later, said, "Oh man, my stomach doesn't hurt anymore." Now,
right, placebo effect.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
But I agree that it works because I use CBG all the time and I love it, especially for inflammation. So, but there's so many cannabinoids out there now and learning more about more. But tell us some more about this, Mrs. Weed Man.
Cannabis is a term used to describe all products derived from a specific type of cannabis plant that consists of more than 500 chemicals. The two main types of cannabis are indica and sativa. Cannabinoids are a group of chemicals or compounds found in the cannabis sativa plant. This includes tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, cannabidiol, CBD, and hundreds of other substances. Cannabinoids may also be naturally present in the human body and are referred to as endocannabinoids. Cannabinoids are commonly used to minimize symptoms associated with pain conditions such as neuropathy, rheumatoid arthritis, and chronic pain. They may also be used for a variety of other conditions such as epilepsy and cancer-related side effects. Cannabinoids are the chemical components of cannabis. They work like messengers, interacting with the endocannabinoid system in our body and working on receptors that can help regulate mood, appetite, memory, and pain. Additionally, cannabinoids activate receptors throughout the body, affecting the central nervous system and immune system. THC and CBD are the two main types of cannabinoids. Cannabinol, CBN, is a less popular type of cannabinoid. Products that contain cannabinoids typically include THC, CBD, or both. THC is mainly responsible for the psychoactive and intoxicating effects that are commonly associated with cannabis use. CBD is known for its potential therapeutic benefits, which range from pain relief to anxiety management. CBD and CBN differ from THC in that they are not psychoactive. They do not cause changes to the mood, mind, or mental state. CBD should not cause mental impairment or a high feeling. While CBD and CBN work similarly, CBD has been more widely studied. More research is needed for us to get a better understanding of the therapeutic potential of CBN. It is becoming popular now. You're finding it in more dispensaries, mixed in products with CBD and THC. The FDA has not approved the cannabis plant itself, the entire cannabis plant itself, for medical use. However, several FDA-approved medications contain individual cannabinoids. Cannabis-related compounds are created in a lab and can be used to manufacture drug products. While cannabis-derived compounds are found naturally in a cannabis plant and can also be used to manufacture medications. The following synthetic cannabis-related medications are currently on the market: Marinol and Syndros, also known as Dronabinol, and they contain artificial THC. That I took.
Did you like it? It was very low dose.
It was very low dose, yeah. It wasn't necessarily effective for me. I didn't take probably enough of it. Then there is Sesamet or the name Nabilone, and it contains an artificial substance that mimics THC. And there's Epidiolex, which I think we hear of the most, which is cannabidiol, a cannabis-derived medication approved by the FDA to treat very specific types of seizures. It contains a purified form of CBD. So that would be the most closely related to the actual plant. In a natural way. Beyond THC, CBD, and CBN, researchers are exploring the potential of other cannabinoids to better understand their varying effects on health and well-being. Cannabinoids and cannabis are closely related, but they are not the same, and they do have distinct differences. Cannabinoids are the chemical compounds that make up the cannabis plant, which include THC and CBD. Cannabinoids are responsible, again, for interacting with receptors in the body, which determine how your body responds. Cannabis refers to the dried leaves, flowers, stems, and seeds of the cannabis plant, which includes cannabinoids as the active ingredient. Cannabis contains high levels of the cannabinoid THC, which is responsible for the mental effects of the drug. Cannabinoids interact with the body's endocannabinoid system, which is found throughout the brain, nervous system, and other tissues in the body. This system acts as a messenger. When cannabinoids are consumed, they send signals to the body, influencing various processes and responses. For example, some cannabinoids may trigger feelings of happiness and relaxation. Others may help alleviate pain or cause drowsiness. There are two main types of cannabinoid receptors. So your body has cannabinoid 1 receptor, called the CB1, and cannabinoid 2 receptor, the CB2. CB1 receptors are primarily located in the brain and central nervous system. They are responsible for the effects of cannabinoids on the mental state. CB2 receptors are found mostly on immune cells and peripheral tissues. They regulate inflammation and immune function. Depending on the specific cannabinoid and its concentration, cannabinoids can produce a wide range of effects, including pain relief, relaxation, appetite stimulation, and mood changes. Understanding how cannabinoids interact with the endocannabinoid system is crucial for exploring their potential therapeutic benefits and ensuring safe and effective use. The majority of people who take cannabinoids use them for chronic pain and mental health conditions. Epidiolex contains a purified form of cannabis-derived CBD. It is FDA-approved for the treatment of seizures associated with two rare forms of epilepsy, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and Dravet syndrome, both typically beginning in early childhood. Epidiolex can be used in people 2 years of age and older to reduce the frequency of seizures in those with either condition. Marinol, Syndros, and Sesamet are used to treat nausea and vomiting caused by cancer chemotherapy. Marinol and Syndros are also used to treat appetite and weight loss in people with HIV and AIDS. Clinical studies suggest that CBD can be used to reduce anxiety and help reduce symptoms associated with mental health disorders. In addition to the FDA-approved formulations, over-the-counter CBD products may be easily accessible, depending on location and state laws. Some promising areas of research for cannabinoid use include sleep problems, PTSD, and movement disorders. Side effects associated with THC are different from CBD, and the severity of side effects usually correlates to the dose. As the dose of cannabinoids increases, so does the likelihood of side effects. Research studies show that even though side effects may occur in those using cannabinoids, there is no major concern for serious side effects when they are used as directed. Cannabinoids do have several potential drug interactions, though, and these should be taken into consideration when determining if treatment is appropriate. There is a risk of the interaction between the cannabinoids and some medications, so it is important to talk to your healthcare provider. Understanding cannabinoids and their effects is crucial for navigating the complex landscape of cannabis-based therapies and supplements. Discuss the risk and benefits of cannabinoid use with your healthcare provider to help determine whether a cannabinoid-based therapy may be an appropriate treatment option for you. Yeah. So I was prescribed dronabinol, and I didn't even know that had existed at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. So I think I was prescribed like, you know, like a week supply, like 5 milligrams or something. So I could take like 5 milligrams 3 times a day. And it wasn't enough. I mean, that medication I was taking was making me so nauseous. So it didn't do the job.
Yeah, you were taking some pretty heavy dose fucking medication.
RSO helped.
Yeah, RSO. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, until thanks, I took too much of that. Yeah. And that was...
Thanks, Mr. B. That was a good article, though.
Yeah. Well, it's just so confusing. Cannabinoids, terpenes... cannabis, sativa, hemp, CBD. Like, there's just so much language. It just used to be weed. Do you have weed? And now as we are able to learn more and as the legalities are allowing for more research to be done, we're just learning more and more about it. And then just, even if it's not like medicinal or however you would say that, like medical, like official... I'm really high right now.
I
can't get my words.
You relit it.
Whether it's like real, like medical research, you know, done with, you know, blood work and questionnaires and like, you know, the full professional burnt research trial, or it's just people doing research. Like right now, even though because of the federal illegalities, they can't take this to schools, they can't take this to hospitals and universities and do research on it. But there's private companies, and there's ways to collect data.
What did we read?
And research.
What, last year or last couple of years, there was like 35,000 research?
Yeah, there's tons. Yeah. There's tons of stuff going on. Right. We're just going to keep learning more, and it's going to get the language about cannabis is going to continue to get more complex. Yeah. So start listening and learning, and so then you learn as we go along.
Right. True.
I still can't figure it out half of the time.
I mean, there's a lot. Yeah. I mean, I went to school for it. Yeah. I read about it all the time. There's always more to learn or even research or even relearn because you forget some of it because there's so much going on at all times.
It's just constantly changing.
Constantly going on. I mean, you got an article coming up about autism, mm-hmm. you know? I mean... There's so many articles we read of what cannabis helps with, you know, and ailments and stuff. So it is so much coming at you right now because the industry is all about growth, you know, and 50 years from now, I'm sure they'll still find studies and stuff they're researching and they'll still find more because there's many cannabinoids we still have to learn about and so many terpenes we have to learn about. Something really good too on the episode 57, I believe, of the Grow Hour, we had a really good guest on, Lev, and he had a cannabis testing company, and in Michigan, it was one of the first. And he an hour and 36 minutes talking about cannabis testing on that episode. It should be out here in a couple of days. So I mean, I would suggest everybody, if you really want to know about what's in cannabis or what's being tested, what's not, how these companies, listen to that episode. It is going to blow your mind. So thanks, Lev, for that one, too, and Big Earl for helping put that episode together. It was really special. The last couple episodes we did on the Grow Hour, some cool stuff. Most Americans who have tried marijuana or psychedelics had positive experiences, this survey finds. I've tried psychedelics. I've smoked marijuana. I've tried your three main psychedelics, mushrooms, MDMA, and LSD. Tried all three. I enjoy them, all three. But I've never taken them for ailment or anything like that. I've taken them as social.
Right. What did you say? Mushrooms?
Mushrooms.
Yeah. MDMA.
MDMA and LSD.
Is acid LSD?
Yes.
Always?
Yes.
Okay.
So... And I've tried all three, and I've used...
Well, doesn't ecstasy fall in there, too, as like one of the primary... That's so popular.
Yeah. I mean, MDMA I think is,
ecstasy would be
is the purer form of ecstasy. Ecstasy had MDMA in it, but it was also some other things in it. So that weren't... Because they were fillers, you know? But pure MDMA is out of this world. I mean, if you've ever tried it...
I can't say I have.
You know, or... you know, LSD on a good hit of SIDS or acid or whatever you call it, it's a mind opening experience. You know, mushrooms, the same thing. It depends on set and setting too, especially with those three. Set and setting, what Mrs. Weedman talked about a long time ago, those three, for sure, you have to be in the right set and setting. I'm telling you right now, if you're not in the right mind frame and you don't,
and you're not in the right environment,
Do any of those, because it takes you down the wormhole. You know, it opens your mind up to good or bad. You know, a majority of Americans have tried marijuana, and most say they have had positive experiences, according to this poll. The survey from YouGov also found that 1 in 5 Americans had used psilocybin mushrooms. 1 in 5. An even greater majority of those respondents described the experience as positive. Most people who have tried other psychedelics like LSD and MDMA also said it was a good time. As the federal government moves to reclassify cannabis and more states pursue psychedelics reform, the poll offers fresh insights into how people have personally used the substance and where they stand on changing drug laws. YouGov asked respondents about 4 substances: marijuana, psilocybin, LSD, and MDMA. By far, the most commonly used was marijuana at 57%, followed by psilocybin mushrooms, 20%, LSD, 16%, MDMA, 11%. It's a lot, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I get, like, kind of perplexed, though, on, like, the size of our population and the size of research groups, and then just deciding that that research group speaks for the entirety of a population. It's like, it's just too small of a subset.
Yes, I agree.
But then there becomes like repetitive, like similar research, like more and more. And so then you have like maybe 10 studies that are kind of identifying the same thing, right, with different groups.
And sometimes you might find something different.
And then there's overlap, like, right, hey, like each study.
I mean, we've read articles where on updated research or science or whatever on cannabis, mm-hmm, we've read the same thing. I mean, how many times have we read about the CB1 and CB2 receptors? How many times have we read about terpenes are? How many times have we read about what cannabinoids are? But it's always the same. But then there's some added research to that, mm-hmm, you know? And it's always, like I've always said, it's always a good reminder because there's so much.
This just popped in my head.
Really?
Right?
Tell me.
How many people, like, okay, again, when research is done, it's not literally knocking on every citizen of the United States door and making them answer a question, right? It's only whatever data they're able to capture, okay? So we know numbers, the estimated amount of U.S. population that consumes cannabis, right?
56 million have tried or use it.
That there's probably just as many who just don't want to admit it. Because they're not comfortable telling somebody that, right? So there's a lot more people who use it, right? And the FDA won't approve it. No one's dying from it. Nothing really bad's happening from it. People are finding all sorts of...
The DEA also.
Right now I'm talking about the FDA.
Okay.
For like drug approval, to give FDA approval on a medication, right? So cannabis, centuries and centuries of use and not really anything terrible happening. I'm taking a medication that is pretty intense, and it is an FDA approved medication for a very rare cell disorder, and they only tested 52 people,
right?
And the FDA said, hey, that's enough people that we're going to approve this medication. Now I'm sure there's a lot more science and things that go into why 52 people is enough, but we also know that big pharma and money move drugs through policy, right? And isn't it weird that, I mean, just on that one little comparison from someone who doesn't really understand statistics and data. But right now in my brain, my high brain, it's telling me that that doesn't make sense. Why doesn't the FDA just freaking approve this shit?
Monies. Notably, when asked whether the substance should be legalized, only marijuana received majority support at 60%. Compare that to psilocybin, 27%, MDMA, 16%, LSD, 15%. No, you're right on, but we know. I mean, why even talk about it? I mean, money makes the world go round. However, among people with personal experiences using drugs, there's majority support for legalization for each of them except LSD. A total of 78% of marijuana users support its legalization. 63% of psilocybin users want psilocybin legalized, and 55% of MDA users support MDA legalization, YouGov said. There's more division among LSD users regarding its legalizations. 38% would support it, and 43% would oppose it. The survey involved interviews with 1,134 American adults from April 25th through the 28th, with 4 percentage point margin of error. Meanwhile, another recent survey found that nearly 3 in 5 Americans consider alcohol or tobacco to be more harmful to a person's health than marijuana. 9 in 10 Americans say marijuana should be legal for recreational or medical purposes. That's by Pew Research Center poll found in March. Pew also released a separate report in February that found 8 in 10 Americans now live in the country with at least one marijuana dispensary. A poll from Gallup that was released last month found that rates of marijuana use are nearly the same in states that have legalized versus that maintain prohibition, which suggests that criminalization does little to curtail its use. So true. So true. I like what you were saying, Mrs. Weed Man. I do. You brought up some really good points. I mean, why doesn't the FDA approve it? I don't know. You should write them a letter and find out.
And really, like, if money's at the root of it, they would, overall, the big picture of the taxpayers, the government, everybody would be making more money on it, right? The FDA would make more money because there'd be more drugs that would be passed through as pharmaceuticals with synthetic cannabinoids and blah, 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 blah. So
what does blah, 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 blah mean?
It means I'm really high.
So this is a really good article because it just shows how weed helps people. Being autistic, weed helps this person thrive in the neurotypical world.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, Ms. Yeah. Weed Mayan.
Awareness of autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and neurodivergence has grown rapidly since the 1990s. Many millennials, specifically women, are realizing that after a lifetime of being told they're too dramatic, too sensitive, or always overreacting, they are actually just neurodivergent. This is the story of Kara, and she's one of those women. And truthfully, she doesn't know if she would have made it to where she is without the help of cannabis. The plant has made living feel softer, taking the edge off of her neurotypical world. A self-diagnosis isn't always the best method for medical care, but it has proven a valuable tool in helping many undiagnosed adults find answers. Kara's journey started like many others. After years of feeling different and performing poorly in social situations, the autistics of social media found their way into her algorithm. Each personal testimony of masking or autism symptoms reminded her of pieces she'd hidden until she was all mask. It felt like walking home. Soon into this journey, she thirsted for answers and turned to RITVO Autism Asperger Diagnostic Scale Revised. So it's RAADS-R. So I'm going to just call it RADS-R. It's a self-report survey that helps identify autistic adults who may not have previously been diagnosed. And she scored in the very strong evidence for autism column every time she would take it. As she connected to her true reality, she's felt like she's slowly wiggling out of a thick latex suit. She's realized through the process that lots of the things she built around herself were tools to cope with being autistic in a society that is built for neurotypical people, weed included. One is the art of wake and bake, which helps her hit neutral and sets the tone for a joyful and productive day. Kara heard this echoed by fellow neurodivergent stoners, but the concept is met with trepidation by many neurotypicals. In the last year or so, since suspecting she might have a spicy brain, she's tracked many of her consumption habits back to autism. Until recently, there was little scientific data on shared cannabis consumption habits among neurodivergent people, though Dr. Mayavi Shields and their cohorts are slowly changing that by even talking about wake and baking for neurodivergent people. Solid data from people like Dr. Shields is on the way, as researchers circle the connection between the endocannabinoid system and spicy brains. While Kara waits, she's using self-observation to understand how her longtime relationship with cannabis might relate to being autistic. What she's realized is that cannabis solves the problem on two ends. Autistic people can be hypersensitive to the world around them. It both gives them a dynamic view of the world and makes their surroundings feel overwhelming. Tools like headphones, sunglasses, and hoods can help overstimulated people, and she's found that cannabis does too. Before taking the self-diagnosis diagnosis testing, Kara would often get overwhelmed and feel like her physical body was too large to exist in the world. It was Alice in Wonderland, when the main character grows too big for the room. Her clothes would become uncomfortable at every seam, the car felt like it was built for ants, and she couldn't stop running into door jams and corners. In these times, a quick toke would bring her back into her body and help her reintegrate into the physical world. Now she understands that as being overstimulated, but before she had no idea what was happening. In time, she's been able to understand triggers and remove herself and alter situations to avoid overstimulation. But when she can't, she still turns to weed. Social situations are also complicated, and knowing the right topics to cover or how to properly follow a conversational thread often escapes her. Beyond this, she's trying to unmask or be herself, even if it's perceived as weird or odd, for the first time at age 36, which is counterintuitive in settings with lots of people, not to mention how it flares up her rejection dysphoria. Taking a 1-to-1 CBD to THC edible, with bonus points if there's CBG, about 30 minutes before arrival has been critical in bringing ease into meeting lots of new people or socializing in big groups like weddings. It also helps take the edge off of the anxiety felt after the event is over, when the dysphoria makes her constantly relive everything she said, hunting for something to obsess over. Weed helps her feel at ease when the world feels impossible to exist in, but it's important to consume.
I feel like that
every day. I'm like, oh. But it's important to consume mindfully, even if it's medical. She's clocked a possible issue with her autism-related consumption as well. People with autism and attention hyper deficit disorder, or ADHD, may have symptom overlap. For Kara, one of those overlapping symptoms is dopamine seeking. Unfortunately, for her flower stash, the ritual of packing and hitting the bong gives her a delightful dopamine rush. She's not addicted to this, but she's identified the habitual nature of it as a consumption red flag to watch. Being autistic isn't a flex or something that Kara takes lightly. For years, she thought something was deeply wrong with how she thought, spoke, and existed. Finding out she might just have autism was like taking a full breath for the first time. And now, as she retraces her steps and figures out how she got here, she's realizing that she couldn't have done it without the plant.
Awesome.
Yeah. I have a nephew who is on the autism spectrum, and he very much enjoys cannabis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. He has a lot of, a lot of autism is sensory issues. And so it just makes him feel, I feel like the times I've asked him how it makes him feel, he's not capable of kind of finding the words or really explaining what it does for him. But he says he just really likes it.
Nice. Good for him. The governor of Wisconsin says that they can legalize cannabis after the election. We'll see. I believe it when I see it. New Hampshire Senate Committee approves marijuana legalization bill with amendments. I also read a little bit earlier today, too, that they want to THC level only be at 16%, as high as it'll go.
That would be the max.
We'll see. In Minnesota, they are looking to do, it's going to be home grow. And I think we read it could be up to 5 pounds. And what's crazy is that's a lot of weed. And in Minnesota, there's a bunch of people now fighting to be able to sell their home grow.
That's good.
I think it's amazing. We talked about this on the Grow Hour, too, yesterday. And I was saying that you should allow people to become caregivers in Minnesota, and you should allow them to be able to grow so many plants like they have and be able to sell their weed and have a clientele of 50 people and be able to make a good living and have a good business, to have good tax write-offs and use your home as a business like you get to do when you work out of your home. And to be able, we've talked about this too. And I think Minnesota, with a bunch of the home growers trying to fight for this, you're going to have to fight for this pretty hard. But if you do and you win, you will be very happy folks in Minnesota. So fight for caregiver programs. Just don't fight to sell your home grow. You're going to have to go to the state and really show a business model and a business plan, which we're so good at. And it's not easy to write a business plan. It's not easy to probably go up to the government and do this. But if you're passionate about and seeking enough to go out there and want to sell your home grow, fight for a caregiver program that's right, that you can make a good living at. 50 clients would be amazing for you. Maybe even get it up to 100, and that's your max. You have to file standardizations. You have to get your flower tested, and you probably can make edibles and all the stuff a dispensary and a cultivator can do in a smaller scale. But there'll be standardizations. There should be testing, and you have to get your weed tested and make sure people are getting proper medicine and stuff. So I think it would be something special if Minnesota, if you home growers in Minnesota can fight for that. I mean, I would. Why not? You know, I want to fight for it here. I should be able to be a caregiver and be able to grow and make a living, not just the dispensaries and the cultivators. Good for them.
Do home grow programs require the home grow to be tested? Or you just grow and sell it to your patients?
Caregivers?
Caregiver growers.
No.
What did I say?
You said home grow.
Oh, I'm caregiver sorry. Caregiver growers.
I think they can do home testing and stuff. I don't know if they have to send it to
nice.
Because it's only 5 clients.
Right.
You know where the weed's coming from, you know. So, and you have to be licensed in Michigan to be able to do that.
So there's regulation around it.
Yes, there's regulations. Yeah. So, but it should, I think every state should allow a caregiver program.
Yeah.
And be able to make a living at it. I think it's wrong that you only let corporations and people with money, a lot of money, like $1,000 a year for a license is reasonable, you know, and you can make $250,000 a year with 50, 100 clients. But that's all you get. But who cares? They're going to come to you, and those are your clients. You sign them up. They use a card. They get a medical card through the state, but you become
that would be more like craft grow level. I mean, 50 to 100 patients, that's a lot of plants.
Yeah, I mean,
I think like Michigan.
I think you have to follow the same standards though as the medical patients that go to a dispensary. You only get 2.5 ounces. You know, you have to stay. You have a medical card, and that's you follow that protocol. Hmm. You know, I think you follow the same regulations that you just don't get to do what you want. I think there has to be some standards and regulations. So, but I think it'd be great for business.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to use you may grow a greenhouse in the back and you make a couple hundred thousand dollars a year doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's something special. I think it should be allowed. Legal marijuana, now party loses major status with Minnesota Supreme Court. There was a marijuana party that got booted from the two-party system. So, yeah, there's no legal marijuana party in Minnesota now. That's terrible. Terrible for that party. That party deserves it. Vermont House of Representatives approved the bill to set psychedelics-assisted therapy working group. The Virginia Department of Health has set up a cannabis special surveillance system. Great. You can't even get it in medical. You can't even get dispensary set up. What do you need a special surveillance system for? Nearly 2,000 Kansans are holders of medical marijuana licenses in Missouri. Damn. Didn't know that. Why can't Texas just vote on legalizing marijuana? Not so fast. It seems simple in theory. If Texans can agree on an issue, why not hold a statewide vote to decide things once and for all? The short answer is Texas is one of 24 states that do not allow statewide referendums or ballot initiatives. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Part of the Reconstruction era measures to keep pure, unadulterated democracy. Really? You call that democracy? Filtered through elected representatives. The long answer is the local fights that Texas cities push to decriminalize marijuana expose what experts describe as intensifying trend in recent years. As Texans' urban centers skew more liberal, the state has pushed back more and more against local control. Scathing internal reports expose New York's cannabis agency, like I talked about earlier, inexperienced, irresponsible, and effective. Heads are rolling. Some key problems the cannabis agency included: erratic changes in licensing regulations, a lack of transparency, and ineffective enforcement. The report called the agency a mission-driven startup rather than a competent government office. The head was fired, like I talked about. Man. They can't get it right. Now they're going and busting all those bodegas that have been selling weed. They busted 70 today. Wow. I just read. There's another 2,200 more they got to go after. If you would have just gave them licenses, they'd be paying taxes on that right now and do it right. Alaska House of Representatives approved a bill to change cannabis tax. I didn't know this. Maybe I did know this. Maybe I've just forgot. In Alaska, their tax-based systems, they've taxed cultivators $50 per ounce. The Alaskan House voted a 36-3 to vote approval bill amidst much needed referendum. House Bill 119 would change the $50 per ounce tax on cannabis to just 7% tax, which was recommended by the Advisory Tax Task Force on Recreational Marijuana. If HB 119 passed in the Senate and was signed by Governor Mike Dulevi, it would take effect starting July 1st, 2024. Many cannabis business owners begged for relief from the current tax situation. How can you make any money? You're spending you're paying Alaska $50 per ounce.
That's crazy.
An ounce might cost $300 and then you tax
and then
50.
You're taxed, yeah.
Yeah, you're taxed 50 and now you're losing money. 7% isn't bad though. That's not bad. At least they better approve that, because that's just like crazy. GOP lawmakers in Ohio finally approve rules allowing cannabis sales to begin in June. Existing medical marijuana dispensaries can now join in. A separate rule also cleared on Monday will allow existing medical marijuana dispensaries to obtain licenses to sell recreational weed. Republican Governor Mike DeWine, who is not a supporter of legalization, routinely urges lawmakers to pass regulations and launch legal sales. So it looks like they're going to get it a little ahead of time. Nice. What young voters think of Biden's big weed move? If there's two things young people love, it's weed and criminal justice reform, said Jack Lobel, a spokesperson for Voters of Tomorrow, calling the move phenomenal. The push is another sign that Biden's administration takes young people and their concerns seriously. Aku Amaning, director of left-leaning Center for American Progress Criminal Justice Reform Team, struck a more cautious note. Another one is, it's still considered an illegal substance that will continue to the harms of drug reinforcement that we've seen today, and we'll have no opportunity to right those wrongs, Amaning said. By the numbers, polling conducted Lake Research Partners last October found that 58% of voters aged 18 to 25 supported rescheduling marijuana. 74% of Democrats and 55% of independents supported rescheduling, while only 41% of Republicans said the same support was higher among younger and women Republicans. The new rule still to be approved by the White House Office of Management and Budget, would also recognize medical use of marijuana, allow the cannabis industry to access banking services. So that's just some of what the young folk think. Why do you think... Or you're actually going to tell me why I should think this. Americans still buy non-legal weed. Illicit cannabis sales, 3 times higher than legal marijuana sales. My thought when I first read that headline was because most legal weed sucks. That was my
tax
first thing.
And quality, yeah. Right? Well, illicit cannabis sales exceeded $74 billion in 2022, outpacing the country's legal sales of $28 billion staggering 164%, according to New Frontier Data's latest report about cannabis consumers in America. The stark gap presents clear opportunities for legal operators who can appeal to the frequent consumers who have become dependent on unregulated channels and the millions of adults who've shown an interest in cannabis but remain hesitant to try it. To understand the underlying issues driving the industry's multi-billion dollar problem, New Frontier Data surveyed more than 5,500 U.S. adults across all market types. The demographically representative sample was surveyed during Q1 of 2023 and includes consumers who rely on a broad range of sources to procure cannabis. So here's the U.S. cannabis consumer in a snapshot. Approximately 42% source cannabis from state-regulated markets overall. 34% of U.S. residents live in adult-use markets. About 24% have access to state-legal cannabis but do not use licensed retailers as a primary source. 17% reside in adult-use markets but source cannabis elsewhere, usually from friends, family, or illicit dealers. 8% are registered patients in medical-only markets, while 7% live in medical-only markets but do not participate in their state's medical program. 34% do not have adequate access in their home state and would need policy reform to join the licensed cannabis market. 23% live in states where cannabis is illegal. 11% are non-medical consumers in medical states. While most dispensaries are competing against each other to serve the same group of people who've committed to legal markets, there are significant opportunities outside the current customer pool. According to New Frontier Data's research, four key barriers must be overcome when attempting to attract frequent gray market customers into licensed dispensary shoppers. Number one, price. Those who buy from gray market sources also tend to consume the most cannabis the most often, with 56% reporting cannabis use multiple times per day. They also consume the most flower, with roughly 32% using more than an ounce per month. While they shop frequently and consume the most, they have lower household incomes than people sourcing from friends and family, who have lower average incomes than licensed dispensary shoppers. To adequately appeal to this segment in 2024, retailers must provide products at a variety of price points with attractive promotions, including bulk discounts and 1 gram deals. Unfortunately, many markets deal with a level of taxation that makes competing on price alone difficult, if not impossible. Two, product variety. Big deal. Manufactured non-flower products are the legal dispensaries differentiator. Even in adult use states, fewer than half of surveyed consumers reported having access to anything but flower, pre-rolls, and edibles. As many as 25% of frequent consumers in adult use markets who primarily purchase from friends, family, or dealers do visit dispensaries on occasion for non-flower products like vape cartridges, concentrates, and topicals.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. Licensed retailers could do a better job of retaining these customers with promotions like affordable flower bundled with non-flower products. And three, product quality. According to New Frontier data, much of the illicit cannabis sold in the U.S. is high-quality flower grown in California. To compete against the gray market, retailers in every legal market must offer in-demand strains with a level of quality that can meet or exceed what's being shipped from California farms. While this holds true for customers who frequently source from friends and family members, quality and freshness are especially important for frequent consumers with higher tolerances and experienced palates. And accessibility. Frequent gray market consumers disproportionately live in urban areas and may not have convenient transportation to a local licensed dispensary. Similarly, those who primarily source from friends and family disproportionately live in urban areas and may not live anywhere near a licensed dispensary. In each of these instances, achieving loyalty is next to impossible. Businesses will need to work with local regulators to change zoning ordinances and delivery coverage areas. In locations with a high population of senior citizens, local dispensaries offer regular shuttle services to bring customers into the store to address this group's primary barrier to retail shopping. While current gray market customers may be set in their ways or dealing with barriers that are difficult to overcome, millions of other potential new adult customers are open to trying cannabis for the first time or the first time in decades. Roughly 39% of potential customers in adult use states describe themselves as likely to try cannabis in the next 6 months, the report states. And the good news is that for any of these potential consumers who choose to begin consuming cannabis, retail is a likely and attractive source of cannabis relative to the illicit market. New Frontier Data's insights about product preferences is especially important here, with 76% of potential customers interested in edibles. Half of the respondents said they would be interested in trying topicals, 42% are interested in beverages, and 28% would like to try tinctures. Only 18% expressed an interest in smoking flower. Although flower may dominate retail sales across the country, dispensaries properly marketing non-flower products stand the best chance of attracting a new wave of older, suburban, canna-curious individuals with disposable income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
All of it does.
Yeah. International news. University in Hong Kong investigating suspected case of cannabis use on campus.
China,
it's very illegal.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes, if you get caught with it. Hong Kong University of Science and Technology launches probe after video circulates on social media appearing to show students smoking cannabis inside dorm room. Good for that student. University stresses it does not tolerate illegal behavior and urges students to abide by law. Crazy. Thailand Prime Minister aims to relist cannabis as a narcotic by the end of 2024. Man, I don't understand why would you vote for somebody you knew going in that this prime minister did not like cannabis, and your whole country now is killing it on cannabis, and then you put this prime minister in who's going to now change everything. Man, you need to go fight for that. Well, there's
a lot of other big topics outside of cannabis, so maybe he's going to fix those problems.
I'm sure, but that why would your country is now making money on it?
Right.
Tourism, and there's dispensaries all over the place, and now you're just gonna crush that whole. You're gonna crush everybody's hopes and dreams. You know,
that sucks.
Yes. Now our kiddos just went to Japan, and I didn't know this. The cannabis market is booming in Japan. The market in Japan expanded from 26.3 million in 2019 to 173 million in 2023.
It's legal there?
No.
Oh, just the illicit market.
The traditional market. The nascent cannabis market in Japan has reportedly seen a massive increase in recent years. That is according to a newly published report by Euromonitor International, which revealed the staggering growth of Japan's cannabis market over the past 4 years. The market, according to the report, expanded approximately sixfold. Euromonitor International, a market research firm based in the United Kingdom, said that the initial investment and entry into the cannabis market by major Japanese companies has not been aggressive due to legal uncertainty until now, along with the negative image surrounding its use. That changed, the company said, in 2024 when Japan amended its cannabis control law for the first time in more than 70 years. The amendment is expected to significantly change the potential and accelerate the use of CBD in diverse fields, including medicine, health, beauty, beverages, and edibles. Edibles in Japan, we read about that a while ago. The revision of the country's cannabis law came in December when Japan's House of Councilors moved to essentially end the prohibition on medicine derived from cannabis. The amendment also ushered in new penalties for cannabis use. The punishment for illicit cannabis is severe, carrying a prison sentence for up to 7 years. That didn't sit well with some Japanese lawmakers, who previously had no penalties, with will now be harshly punished with a maximum of 7 years of prison. I oppose the bill because there are serious problems here, Rep. Taro Yamamoto said at the time. The change to the country's cannabis laws also allows for cultivation of hemp, a bid to reduce Japan's imports of the products. You know people are going to take that hemp-derived Delta-9 and sell the hell out of that. Mm-hmm, if hemp is, you can grow hemp, you can get Delta-9 from it. So it's going to be a pivotal year in Japan. We'll see what happens. Go Japan. Last week, on the last episode, I talked about smoking cannabis alone. Yep. Now, it wasn't my favorite thing to do. I've done it. I still do it. It's just not my favorite MO, right? Mm-hmm. So I found another article for you this week talking about how weed doesn't smoke the same without others.
Yeah. And I was saying last week, I don't mind smoking alone. Right.
I'll do it. It's just not my MO. It's just not my favorite thing to do. I like being around people when I smoke. Mm-hmm. I like being around either just you and I, because you and I get in some great conversations. We also have some not so great conversations because we're talking ideas, and sometimes I don't agree with your idea and you don't agree with mine. And then, you know, then the little bickering comes and then we smoke another joint and then we're happy again, you know? But smoking alone thing is just, out of all the smoking ways you could smoke, it's my least favorite because I like smoking weed with people. Mm-hmm. It's a social thing. It's a camaraderie thing. It's so much. So talk about this article, Ms. Weed Man.
So last week we talked about how smoking weed alone can be beneficial, and this is about how it should be smoked with others. So I don't smoke weed all day, every day, but there's a time when I did. When I got my first job on the cannabis beat more than a decade ago, I elevated my endocannabinoid system all the time, simply because I could smoke, dab, and eat weed all the time. It was a novelty to be high with my coworkers, my boss, people I was interviewing for an article. But when the pandemic took our hands off the wheel of life, just about as recklessly as a self-driving car on the streets of San Francisco, it limited access to the physical presence of other people. And, as it turns out, not only do we need in-person connections to thrive, when it comes right down to it, weed just doesn't smoke the same without others. I'm not saying you can't get high or higher smoking cannabis alone. I'm arguing that smoking with someone else will always be better because cannabis is a connector, and the most transparent public display of that happens each year on 420. The legend of the adventures of a group of teenage boys meeting up at 4:20 p.m. to search for a cannabis grow is embedded in the lore of cannabis culture forever. Fueled by lids of fresh green smoke and driving a 66 Chevy Impala along the rocky, forested, and wild seashore of the California coastline in Marin County, the adventure tales of the Waldos reached the world through articles written by High Times impresario Steve Hager. That's why writing about 420 for High Times is such a sacred act. This magazine is a critical player in establishing the history of 420. What started as a safari searching for a patch of weed with a treasure map by a group of high school friends has become the world's largest smoke sesh. Mm-hmm. Smoking weed at home alone isn't nearly as fun as it is smoking with others. Without the ability to share cannabis safely and freely, I started smoking less. I'm still adjusting to working outside of an office, and many days are lonelier than I'd like to admit. But with more and more weed events happening, I'm ramping up my social cannabis routine again. 420 is something the cannabis community celebrates altogether. It unites us, and it is vitally essential to our mental health and well-being that we gather to show unity. I want to see other people and smoke their weed. I want to make new friends through weed. Together, we can all get higher. This year, if you're smoking cannabis in public squares and parks, I want you to know that you are helping to light a fire by lighting your fire. And this blaze we are building through Blazing Together is fueling increased access to cannabis all over the planet. On the flip side of its social energy, solo cannabis smoke sessions can ignite introspective experiences. This can be a good thing, but I'm guessing most of us could use more of the opposite in these post-pandemic times. The flower is freeing. As the risks around sharing a smoke have diminished, I'm feeling more comfortable in social situations. Through visits to social cannabis clubs in cities like Barcelona and San Francisco, I'm remembering how fun it is to enjoy cannabis with other people around. Still, when I talk about these places with non-smokers, they often assume they are dangerous. The negative stigmas around these social smoke spaces continue. So sharing these places with others is essential. This year, my mom wanted me to take her to a weed lounge for her 73rd birthday.
That's awesome.
And when I did, she was able to see how normal and natural it is to smoke cannabis in a club. We bought a pack of pre-rolls and sat by the window on a sunny San Francisco afternoon. Afterward, she told me how much safer she felt not trying to hide away in some dark alley smoking on the street. Opening up new people to the weed lounge experience helps the cannabis freedom cause. The dream is that one day smoking a joint at a club might be as typical of an experience as ordering a beer at a bar. The best part of cannabis is the people it brings into your life. The history of this plant is a history of community, the history of community and cultivators. Building relationships through the guidance of this plant has greatly contributed to an increase in positive moments in my life. Cannabis brings us together, but the greatest reward is the experience of spending time with others. I hope, however and wherever you spend your future 420s, that you do it with others and especially with your friends and family.
Connector. Weed the connector. Not we the connector.
Weed the connector. The connector.
How many Americans are stoners?
I don't know how many. You said something like 52 million or something?
No.
No, because there's stoners, burners, and potheads.
Yes, but how many people do you think are stoners? I mean, they're all the same in some
12
ways.
Million.
All right, let's see. Smoking weed is more mainstream than ever. Pretty much everyone in America agrees the plant should be legal, and roughly half of the adults that have tried it at least once in their lifetimes. But how many people admit to consuming cannabis on a reg, and could that technically be stoners? According to the recent survey, 40% of Americans use marijuana products at least once a week. Approximately 15% said they consume daily. The data comes from a poll of over 2,000 U.S. adults. Smoking flower, taking ingestibles like gummies or infused drinks are the most popular form factors. Over 50% of consumers prefer vapes, while roughly 42% like to dab concentrates. The numbers are a stark increase from the Gallup survey, where only 17% of adults said that marijuana, smoking marijuana, said they smoke marijuana. However, the number may not have been indicative of the whole if edibles and other consumption methods were considered. Polls reveal mixed feelings about stigma. Another interesting tidbit, stigmas around cannabis are out. Yeah. But internal conflicts remain. According to the poll, 64% of people feel marijuana no longer carries the stigma it used to. There's still still a lot out there, though. Mm-hmm. That includes nearly three-quarters of Democrats and 60% of Republicans. However, just because broader societal shifts are happening doesn't mean folks are ready to talk about their personal consumptions just yet. Around 64% of survey respondents are selective about sharing the cannabis regimens, and over half would resist disclosing on the first few dates with someone new. And while cannabis consumption seems more prevalent than ever before, most agree that there's still a lot to learn over the plant. Over 70% of Americans believe people still don't understand marijuana well enough. I can agree with that. This may be reinforced by the fact that the cannabis has remained a Schedule I drug. I mean, we went to our local community. There's a dispensary trying to open up here. We went to the town hall meeting, and I would say about 80% of the people in that room didn't know shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now there's 20 of us trying to fight the 80%.
Mm-hmm.
That usually happens. First cannabis stoners, burners, and potheads. But this may all change soon, since the government might be finding some evidence that the plant has therapeutic benefits. The poll was conducted prior to the announcement of DEA intends to move cannabis to a Schedule 3. It is unclear whether the news would be have affected the answers, but 64% of respondents said 2024 would be a good year for cannabis industry, believing that the plant would be legal soon. Time will only tell if these predictions will hold true, but the poll numbers definitely show promise for stoners hiding in the shadows. At this point, most people see no reason to hide. I don't fucking hide anymore. Mm-hmm. Hell no. I had to whip it out and smoke it. I don't give a fuck. No, but seriously.
Because someone always smells it and is like, woo, we right. got the good stuff.
But I mean.
And then someone else rolls their eyes
yes,
at you.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't blatantly like go right on the street. And I mean, I'll walk off to the side. Like when you right. smoke a cigarette, you don't smoke right out in front of the doorway.
Right.
You know, that's rude.
So you step like, off to the side
like
somewhere.
You're smoking a yeah. cigarette you, or vaping a nicotine vape. You go off to the side of the doorway, to the left or to the right. So you're not blocking the door, period. You know, it's rude to do that. So, I mean, just – I mean, I don't hide it. I don't give shit. But it's just the point is be ethical when you are. Or you show some ethics and show some couth, I guess you would want to call it, right?
Couth.
Yeah. Or just be a good human. Couth. Or just be a good human being and don't be rude.
Yeah.
Right?
That's pretty, yeah, that's right. pretty basic.
Yeah. So for some. Not for others. Ms. Weed Man?
Mr. Weed Man.
That's the end of the show.
That went fast.
Always does when you have a good time.
I'm ready to like try to finish that joint. Keep it lit for more than one puff.
We'll smoke that shit out when we're done here.
Yeah, we will.
Got anything else to say before we go?
Everybody, have a fantastic week. Don't forget to grab a ticket and come out to Blue Island Beer Company on Sunday if you're living local or passing through town. But have a great week. Stay well.
Nice. And everybody out there in the world, we love you. As Paulie always says, smoke smart. Puff, puff, and away.
Puff, puff, pass.
Check out our cannabis lifestyle brand online at 8decades.com. Our custom smokes and accessories are perfect for your coffee table, bedroom nightstand, or kitchen counter. They're designed for you to show them off. The canna community is also loving our hemp and cotton blend t-shirts, sweatshirts, scarves, and hats, finished off with our 8decades logo. We've got some awesome long-lasting goods that will be your favorite for years to come. 8decades, because a ninth decade of cannabis prohibition isn't acceptable.